Welcome to an upbeat Naked Football Show after two wins, the first time it's happened since 1604 or nearabouts. We welcome back Mr. Joe Fares to the show.
Hello.
Good evening, Joe. Welcome back. Were you on the first one this season or pretty much?
Yeah, two of the first. Yeah, this season.
Absolutely. So welcome back, Joe. And of course, my able accomplice, Mr. DJ.
Good evening,
DJ. I must put your mic up so we can actually hear you.
Sorry.
That's better, isn't it? If you want to email in, please do studio@icrfm.co.uk. During the week, just nakedfooty@yahoo.co.uk. We do have a new text number as well if you want to text in, which is Ipswich. That's 01473, of course. 857078. That's Ipswich, 857078. Okay. Well, Joe, you didn't go to Bolton, did you? I'm guessing.
No.
No, and DJ did.
I did, yes.
So look, we'll have to start with you then, won't we? Off you go. What do you make of it?
First half, average. Bolton weren't much better. It was a great goal from their point of view. Terrible from ours. We backed off, gave him room. He shot from 25 yards out, put in the top corner with Henderson not moving at all. Crowd thought, well, Henderson not moving. It's gone in. Thought, here we go again. But we saw it the rest of the half, and not much, you know, no. Both teams having good amount of the ball and not really doing much with it, not really putting the chances in.
Mm.
Got to half time and felt, well, if we get a goal in the second half, they look like a team, well, we could actually kind of knock their confidence a bit. They didn't seem the ones, you know, sometimes you stir a hornet's nest if you score and then you get the onslaught.
Felt, the natives get angry, don't they?
Yeah, we felt quietly confident because, yeah, the natives were very quiet, actually.
Were they?
Yeah, very quiet. So we felt, and then it came. And we looked good second half. You know, we were playing really well. And then Mick had a little roll of the dice.
Yeah.
Making subs, moving people around the pitch. His point of view, he's saying that Drury, who'd come in for Higham, obviously, was looking a bit leggy, a bit tired. And so moving Orr into midfield, dropping Edwards to right back, and then bringing on Chopra and Jett. And it was those guys that really transformed the team, bringing those three on. And Chopra scored the goal that he's paid to score.
It's
nice because forgetting all the other trouble, and his all-round play this season hasn't warranted him a start, and he hasn't been setting the world alight when he has come on a sub. But 89th minute, on a penalty spot, ball is loose. You don't want anybody else in that penalty but him, and that's it, stuck it in.
It's not even loose for long, was it? It was
instant.
Before he had a chance to have a second grab at it.
It's that instinct that he's got there.
Johnny on the spot.
Yeah, he did the same thing at Watford away, 89th minute winner. Coventry last season, be the right person at the far post just to nick the ball in. So let's hope that's a good confidence boost for him and getting back on the right track.
Well, there seems to be a bit more competition for places up front now. It seems that Mick likes a big man, so you've got a choice of Murphy or Barnett alongside a little man, which is Campbell or Chopra. And
you've also got Jett, of course, because he likes playing Jett up front, doesn't he?
You've got Scotland, who's not quite in the reckoning at the moment, but is an option as well.
I reckon we've seen the end of Scotland.
We possibly have.
He just doesn't fit into a Mick team, does he? Big man, little man, he's just...
He's a big man in a little man's body, yeah. He's stocky, but he's not tall, is he?
Yeah.
No. But it's competition all over the pitch because we had the reserve game and it was quite a lot of first teamers playing. But to beat Spurs 5-1 and by all accounts a good Spurs team, that just showed the competition that is there from the guys that aren't starting.
Well, it's nice to see a tactical masterstroke as well, isn't it? To bring three players...
A positive move as well.
Yeah, I remember seeing a study of Premier League managers, and it showed who'd made the worst substitutions in the Premier League ever. And it was Jewell was bottom of the list of making substitutions that didn't affect games. And I just can't remember him making substitutions that affected game dips, which he just seemed to always leave it too late. No. Bring someone on with 1 minute left, or leave Jett on who couldn't run at the end of the match.
Joe Royal was one that was never afraid. 50 minutes, 5 minutes in the second half, don't like it, just go for it, gamble. Sometimes you have to, and Mick, don't know whether he'll claim credit for that or not, but he'll certainly take it. And it's just positive, and you've seen the players respond to it, and the crowd as well. And again, it was that sort of thing when we actually went the goal down. The crowd didn't lose faith because they weren't on top, they weren't battering us. It wasn't like, well, oh, here goes, this is the floodgates opening. It was, all right, they've stuck one in they shouldn't have done. It was a very good shot, but...
Yeah, well, I listened to the radio, and the Bolton crowd just were not vociferous at all.
No.
And it seems like Mick saw that opportunity to actually, let's chuck on Edwards at right back, to actually just bombard them and try and actually win the game, because if we start getting on top, the crowd are going to get on their back and actually take advantage of the negative home crowd. But
I know there was another point as well, which was Jet picking the ball up, dribbling past the four blokes at half a mile an hour like he does. He doesn't speed past them, but he just silkily and then blazed it miles wide again, and the crowd kind of laughing at it. Not the frustration, not the anger normally that you'd kind of shout, what you're doing. Kind of laughed at it and felt, we're okay because we're playing a positive way. If he does that again another time, you're going to get chances from it. And it was.
Well, he's a confidence player.
He is confidence.
And at home, the crowd is so quick to turn on him. Even around me, as soon as he comes on, you can tell people are wanting him to make mistakes sometimes.
That's it. And the two bounce off each other, don't they? It's a confidence crowd as well. From what we've been through the last few years, it's very easy to get down. And it takes a lot for the crowd to lift the players. It always takes something, Phil. A little bit of play, a chance, or something, just to get the crowd going. And then, it works, bouncing off each other. But fantastic.
I do think he's got a wonder goal in him somewhere. It's going to come out of the blue, isn't it, something?
Let's hope it's not when we're 3-0 up or 3-0 down. It's a 1-1 in the last minute.
Well, this was my argument about Chopra as well, because when Chopra came on, there was a little bit of oh no, from the fans. And I get that. As I say, he hasn't contributed a lot. His off-field problems haven't helped. Didn't help Jewell, obviously. Haven't helped the squad overall, when he should be there being the main man, being the goal scorer. And we've been lucky that we've had Campbell come in, who's done such a good job. But it's one of those things you think, well, he's the man, and he's going to do it, and he did. So
I actually think Chopper's a better player than Campbell. I think Chopper's never had a chance of just playing alongside a target man, which is where he's going to be better. I think he's a better finisher than Campbell, and I think he's better in and around the box. But Campbell's come in and done well, while Chopper's done done poorly. But now they're playing alongside a big man, I think. I wouldn't be too fussed if Campbell went back if we could guarantee to keep Chopper's head for the rest of the season. But that's the hard part.
It is. It is difficult doing that. But now we've got a more set system of the way we're going to play. The players seem more comfortable, more positive with it. And as you say, up front now, if we're going to play two up front all the time, you've got somebody to feed off. Chopper will get more goals. And that confidence will breed
better performances. We're picking players around the system, where under Jewell it always seemed that we'd pick the system around who was available and who we could sign, and we'd end up with a big squad but a totally imbalanced one with one winger and seven centre forwards.
That's it. But even the likes of Martin, who we were saying last couple of weeks, 4-4-2 probably doesn't suit him as well because he's not a winger. But when you've got 10 other players that are playing their position, then Martin can do the best job he can. Before, when we were playing that way, and you're asking him to play out wide, he'd always drift in, he'd always be trying to tackle back. And which is great in one respect, but it left him out of position where he should be when you're going forward again.
Shape
gives him a chance
important
to be a bit more disciplined. Maybe he's not the solution there. Maybe we still need to bring a winger in.
Well, we've linked with Stephen Hunt.
Yes.
He seems a
for this level where we're at, that seems a perfect fit, doesn't it?
How did remembering my question and then I got bored with myself. How did Drury play? I know you see.
It was much and nothing. Nothing bad, but that first half, neither team got anything really going, and it was a case of he looked a bit tired, and it was only after like the 50 minutes hour. So moving Orr, who's got a little bit more tackle to get around in midfield, a bit more edgy.
Is he looking slightly better? I mean, he had a disaster at Leicester, didn't he?
Saw
that.
Yeah,
I thought he was really poor in the first half against Peterborough. The second half he was okay.
He got better, didn't
Forest,
he?
He was good, so he seems to have
got better.
Be into it, yeah.
That's
so.
It.
Did he look reasonable up?
He slotted in okay. Didn't look out of place in there at all. But it's strange because this is now when we want to get a bit of consistency, don't we? We want the guys challenging for places from the subs bench. But we pretty much want the same first 11, don't we? And it's a shame with Higham, because I mean, you can say, now Mick knows about Higham and he knows what he's doing. I still think, if he had Riakoka fit and as first choice, sadly, but Riakoka would probably get the nod, wouldn't he?
Well, that's a tough one, isn't it? You can say it's Higham's shirt at the moment to lose, isn't it?
And then he picks up a knock after the performance that he made. So that's the shame. You want to keep that base.
I'd still say Higham is, if he's fit, he'll play.
Yeah.
For at least the next game, because he's, because of his last performance, compared to Rio Coco's last performance, which was abysmal.
You know, I don't wish that on too many players, but hopefully we have seen the last of Rio Coco now, because he's only on a short term till January, and the Rio Coco that we thought we were signing was the player that we needed. Somebody who's a leader, who's been there, done it, who's, you know, got a bit of bite in his, and, you know, knows what he's doing and can lead, but he's just been shouting at players and moaning a lot of time when it's actually been his fault.
What was his first game? Was it Watford away?
No. It was... Was it when we lost in the last minute? Hull, was it? When we lost 2-1?
It was away anyway, wasn't it? Because he played reasonably well in that game. I thought he's going to... Because he wasn't match fit, I thought, give him 2 or 3 weeks, he's going to be very classy, but it's gone the other way, hasn't it?
That's it. You know, but that was what you felt, you know. Obviously, you hadn't been playing for 3 months or what have you, and it was going to take time to get the fitness up, and it just hasn't, and he hasn't progressed.
It was a Palace game where we lost 5-0, and he came out and said, that will never happen on my watch again.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later, we lost 6-0 to Leicester.
Well, it didn't happen again, did it?
It was worse.
And little telltale signs were at one point he's screaming at Tommy Smith because Tommy Smith didn't close down a player, the player that he'd let drift past him. And it's like, well, you know, there's a little bit of balance of you've got to sort your own game out first before you can shout at other players. Players like Tommy, who, to be fair to him, the last few games has been absolutely fantastic. He's been given the hard task of being given the big, strong centre-forward of the opposition to kind of manhandle through a game, and he's done a very good job of it.
He had one loose moment against Forest, didn't he, a week before, but other than that,
he's forgivable. Not good. That's the difference now. When you're on a roll and you're more playing better and you're more, you know, they are honest mistakes. Before, they're the same old mistakes. They're the useless players, you know, they're mindless or they're not concentrating. When you play 90 minutes perfectly, you make that one mistake, and as long as it doesn't cost you a goal, you think, well, no, that's forgivable, that's acceptable.
Mm. Mm. How do you see the Forest game, Joe?
I thought we played really well. It's the best we've played for some time.
Absolutely,
really. It's what I'd expected when we had when McCarthy was appointed. You sort of know what you're going to get with him. You're going to get sort of two centre backs, full backs that will get forward and try and get crossing at the earliest opportunity, pace on the wing, two battlers in the midfield that want to get the ball and just play it out to the wide men, and a big man, little man up front, and it worked to as you'd expect it to work.
Mm.
It's never going to win you the Premiership playing like that, but. We're not in the Premiership,
not yet.
No, but this is the whole Mick McCarthy thing. I mean, it's been dubbed Mick the Magician at Wolves just from one comment that he made on a press conference saying the MM doesn't stand for that. And then after his first game, he won, and the press came back to him and said, "Oh, does it stand for Mick the Magician?" And it doesn't. Mick McCarthy.
It's back to basics, isn't it?
It's a very simple game. It's not an easy game, but it's a very simple one.
If you think under Jewell, when he came in, he said, "I want to play 4-4-2 with wide men."
Yeah.
And then in the summer, we ended up with Andrews, Leadbitter, Bullard, Bowyer, and then we tried to fit them into a diamond formation in the middle. And it's just like you can't just keep signing who's available to try and fit it around like that.
We finally got
a manager who is looking. The first thing he did come in, Edwards isn't a right back. I'll bring in a right back. We need a big man up front because we've got all little strikers. Yeah. Bringing Barnett, and it's just doing the stuff that you'd expect a manager to do. If you were managing on Football Manager, you'd expect to do.
It's just unbelievable the situation of 3-4 years of not signing a right back to either back up David Wright or replace David Wright, and within 1 week mixed. Mm. And the thing as well, we've linked with Bradley Orr. And before you've digested that information, the new story is we've signed Bradley Orr, which is a whole different thing now as well. Before
it's, and like, it's with a long-term permanent.
You know, the only one so far was Hunt, we've been linked with for a January move. But so far, a game with Barnett as well, you know, it's been linked with him and we signed him. There wasn't this whole week of speculation and will we, won't we, is he coming, is he not? It's if he wants his man, it seems.
It's good that we can look forward now, because I do feel we've got the right man in charge. I wasn't convinced in the build-up that McCarthy was the right man, but the more found out about him and the more you've seen him in action, it does seem. I can't imagine that there's any Ipswich fans that would think that he isn't the right man. And you just have to look how the club's looking. I know it's only a friendly, but the reserves beat Tottenham.
Yeah.
The youth won their Youth Cup game the night before. The manager went to both of them. The under-18s are playing in the under-21s. Yeah. The first team are dropping back. There seems to be a community spirit going through from the 16s to the first team.
Club-oriented manager as well. When speak to fans of other clubs and that he's been involved with. He said he's not one for just, you know, I'm the first team manager, whatever. He gets involved with the club, goes around, sees all the other staff, goes and watches, you know, the lower levels. And say that that kind of feeling around the training ground, the first team are doing well, it will feed down. And the reserves won't go, oh, well, I'm not getting in the team now. Yeah. There's, well, if they're winning, you still want to be playing first team football, but you're not going to be so upset and you're not going to be kind of arguing your case as much and get, you know, yeah, and getting down and getting.
It's the same as any workplace. You just need to engage the staff. And it seems that the people are engaged all the way through, all the players are engaged all the way through the club. And one of the things that was always seen as good about Ipswich is that the academy people would go to lunch with the first team when they finished training. There isn't a training ground here and the first team are elite anywhere else.
That's right.
There just seems to be getting back to that real basics of getting the club to work from top to bottom, which has been sadly lacking for too long.
Well, this is the issue a lot of people saying about the club in general. Marcus has come over, it's a business, it's, you know, it's lost that family feel, that community feel. Well, the family, the community feel, the way that the club represents itself, or the feel around the club, is only by the fans and by the players. It doesn't matter who owns the club, doesn't, you know, that doesn't dictate the way that the club, you know, the feeling around it, the atmosphere and the way that the people act. I mean, sometimes maybe the club is too nice, maybe it is, you know, too friendly and the rest of it, but yeah, I'd still rather have that nice, friendly, local community club.
Well, there's a good article, Brian Klug in The Star tonight, I don't know if you read that, he was very hopeful about the kids coming through now,
yeah,
which has got to be a good sign, talking mainly after that game last night.
Well, but that's also that, you know, it's going to take a couple of years, but there's been that drought the last 2-3 years where we haven't had the players coming through, because we've always had 3 or 4 and then one's made it or a couple have made it but had to drop down a level, but there's always,
well, the problem was it just seemed that the real short termism in that it seemed as if somebody wasn't ready for the first team at 18 they'd be released. So we released someone like Tom Eastman who goes to Colchester and he's their player of the season or young player of the season. We released Lavery, he's at Sheffield Wednesday, Cropper's at Southampton. It just seems such a strange way to do it, the releasing clubs.
But it's also
rivals,
from that point of view, if Tom Eastman's never going to be your first choice and he's not going to be good enough, okay, I get that, but at 18, you're going to decide that he's not, you know, if he's not going to be in the squad week in, week out, 18, you can pass it off, because you don't know what's going to happen in the 19, 20. But also, you get a couple of injuries, no panic, you're okay, you've got somebody who's been training week in, week out, knows the system, knows the players, and should, you know, bar a little bit of first team, you know, sharpness, should just fit straight into that setup.
Yeah, well, Tom Eastman's one of the strangest ones that I've sort of ever seen with it, in that we offered him a 6-month contract. Yeah. Colchester offered him a 2-year contract straight away. Colchester's academy coaches are Richard Hall and Tony Humes, who are centre backs that have worked with him since he's 9.
Yeah, exactly.
Colchester take him on and then loan him out to Crawley instantly on a 6-month loan.
Yeah.
Well, why aren't we keeping him and sending him out to Crawley on a 6-month loan rather than offering
This is the general thing with some youngsters. I'm not going to mention a certain name, but there's...
Well, actually, you can, because the man from Block H complained that last week's show was a bit too upbeat and not enough controversy because we just had a win and it's such a rare occurrence.
Okay,
I will mention the name. Jordan Rhodes scored yet again last Sunday.
This was the issue with that one, you know. Jordan was, whether, you know, and there is a very good argument that he wasn't ready for first team week in, week out, and he pretty much admitted himself that he needed football, he needed general football to get the level. And going to Huddersfield has done his career no end of good. Going to a setup where they appreciated that he's a young player that's limited in what he could do, score goals, but the all-round play probably wasn't there, and he had that time to develop. Now, why couldn't we just kept him and sent him on loan?
Which is what we had done. They'd sent him to Brentford and so on, and he'd done really well. And he was always scoring goals. I mean, there you go, Mr. Block.
But even if it's a season-long loan at the League One team or whatever, you know,
absolutely.
Even if he'd gone to Huddersfield or something for a season.
I think it just sums up the short-term approach that we'd had in place, because we basically sold Roach to buy Priskin, and obviously in hindsight that's a disaster, but at the time you could see that Priskin was probably a better bet to get promoted in two years.
And if you want to be controversial, then you can't blame Clegg and you can't blame Marcus Evans for that.
They back the manager, which is a good thing, isn't it?
But this is the argument as well from their point of view. I mean, it's, as a fan, we're not all experts, we've got our own opinions, and some of them, you know, on the whole are probably right, especially, you know, when we've been screaming for a right back and Mick comes in and does it, you know, we're like, thank play two up front. Thanks, you know, yeah. And, and we can say that, but they employ the manager and they have to back him, and they can't say, "Oh, I don't know about that," because if you guys,
could you blame them in them saying they're going to back the manager, but you've got to get promoted in 2 years, and he sees Jordan Rhodes as a 18-year-old and thinks, "Well, I need somebody who's
scored straight away." Yeah.
So you, you do
Jordan
need
him come 21 will be a main striker. No, no, this is but then they can't interfere in that. It's really. It must be difficult because they can probably see mistakes that are made.
I think there does need to be some more accountability to the management structure. And I listened to Clegg at the AGM, and it's like, why did you bring in Henderson? Because the manager said he needed him. And it's like, well, surely you can see that we've got a keeper on a 3-year contract and you're offering him a 3-month loan to someone who's not an experienced keeper.
This, this is his argument because he was
What did he say to that, as a matter of fact, John?
He just said, you've got to back the manager. The manager makes all the decisions. But that when the manager, like Jewell, it was clear when he brought in Henderson, he was two or three defeats from the sack.
Yeah.
And it turned out that's actually what it was. You can't sort of sacrifice a long-term future just to back the manager. There does need to be some direction from above.
Yeah. No, we haven't been off of Brad Freed or something on loan, have we? So it wasn't that sort of...
It's someone who's a few months older than Loach. If it was if it was Kelvin Davis or somebody who's 35 that you're bringing in for a bit of experience, but you're replacing like for like. And
But this is the argument as well, because he was also asked about football. You know, are you a football chief executive? Well, I don't think many chief executives, when they take the job, are football men. But liked him or hated him, blame him for whatever, David Sheepshanks was a football man, and you wonder if he was in the setup still whether he would have questioned more. Maybe he still would have backed, maybe he still wouldn't have interfered as, you know, and kept his and said, you're the manager, we'll back you, but maybe he would have questioned some
of the requests
a bit more.
We better have a look at any emails. Good evening. I'm glad last week's predictions came true and Town won at Bolton. Last time I was on, this was from Mark Anderson, that's why. Last time I was on was before Barnsley away last season, so maybe I am the lucky away day mascot. Keep up the good predictions. Thank you, Mark. That means you'll have to come on every week. That's the trouble.
As long as he predicts a win.
Right, here we go. If I can find it. I'm starting to lose my way. Sorry. With you in an hour. Just hang on there. Do you know what happened to last week's show? This is from Carl. Well, if you ever lose them, just go on Those Were the Days, because Phil always has them. I send them across. Or you can go to... if you put Sibelius7 on Twitter. That's me. I'll always put them out. Did try doing a naked football thing on Twitter, but it became too complicated for a Luddite like me to do both. Paul Atkins, listened to my first iTunes podcast last week. Oh, because Paul isn't around, is he? Good to hear the news again. Obviously, I've missed a great deal and was wondering what news of Paul Taylor. Saw the initial report on Those Were the Days, but all seems to have gone quiet. Have I missed anything? Is it all hush hush until the court case? Well, I reckon.
That's when they're talking about the assault charge.
If you're talking about
injury,
that, yeah.
Rather than his injury,
as far as injuries goes, he's out for the season pretty much, isn't he, by all accounts? Yeah. And the court case just has to be.
He'll be one of those. We'll probably see him make a cameo last game of the season or something.
Yeah.
Wormwood Scrubs 11.
When playoffs are just beyond us, you know.
Ian Davies. Oh, this is our man Slower Ball, isn't it? Of course. Really enjoyed it at Bolton on Saturday. A great win and a good performance, which saw us get better and better as the game progressed. Going one down so early to a great strike, although someone should have closed it down before he got his shot off. I expected another Palace or Fox-style hammering, but we gritted it out until half-time. Much better second half. Very poor support from the home fans and some astute substitutions from our Mick, which is exactly what you've just been saying. We very much deserve the victory, which could and maybe should have been by a higher margin. Very pleasing cameos from Jet and Chopra. Fantastic celebrations for the goals and at the end. Marvellous. Still lots more work to do, though, but clearly the improvements are evident. Lastly, the pricing for the Villa FA Cup tie, £20 for adults, £5 for kids. Very reasonable indeed. Hope to see you all there. The league is obviously our main focus, but a good cup run means you're winning games, building confidence and coining it in. Ka-ching! Love the show. Thank you, Slurball. Sorry for the lengthy email, but I didn't get the chance to send one last week. Bless him. he's our number one fan, Slurball, like him.
Yeah, I enjoy a cup run as well.
The ticket allocation, though, there's a bit of few complaints on Those Were the Days about they got less than 2,000, haven't they? 1,900? Is it 2,900?
3,000 tickets.
2,900.
We want more, surely. So 3,000 tickets.
Yeah, that's the initial allocation.
The way, as I understand it, works when in a league anyway, it's all sell or return. So we'll take an allocation of tickets. Whatever we don't sell, we send back. That's fine. And then we pay the club, you know, for what we've sold, and we and the club kind of take whatever they take from it. With regards to the Premier League, certainly the way it works is, if you take up to a certain amount, it's sell or return basis, it's fine. If you take a full amount, you pay for the full amount, regardless of whether you sell it or not. And maybe that's what's stopping the club from taking the fall.
But in the you split the gate in the Cutler, don't you?
You
35%.
But
you're allowed up to 15%.
But if the club were to take 6,000, they'd have to pay outright for 6,000 tickets. If they take the 3,000, then it would be a sale or return. That's how I understand it works.
Okay.
Anyway,
will we be able to request more tickets?
Don't know, possibly, because reading
Villa released
the website on their website, they released all the ticket prices, and they were saying there's one of their stands, they're not even opening the upper tier to create a better atmosphere. I think it's just basically we won't sell the tickets,
right,
is what they're saying.
So have to move on. More emails. Hello, Naked Footballers. This is from Sean Laws, who, oh, he's in Oz, isn't he, if I remember rightly. 2 points I was wondering about since the fantastic Bolton win. Isn't it great to have a manager that has the knowledge to improve the team's performance as a game proceeds, instead of being outmanaged in the second half as in recent times, which again we've just covered? Very well observed. Also, with Sunderland's troubles continuing, if Connor Wickham became available, should we try to sign him? Panel, what do you think?
I don't think he will. He came on for the second half against Norwich and looked quite good on Sunday.
Yeah.
We can't
afford his wages.
I think he'll be playing a lot more for them.
You sign
in
an
8 million
pound player, you pay him the wages that match that, and that's not in our budget, unfortunately.
Okay, one more from Chris Rand, but I can't read it because the writing's too small. I'm going to move my mic. Bear with me. Right, you sounded surprised when it was suggested just now that Chopper is better than DJ Campbell, but although his work rate is terrific, his record is hardly exceptional. 6 goals and 11 starts sounds decent enough, but 2 were penalties and 2 rather dodgy, to say the least. Oh yes, very especially the first one. So with 2 proper goals in 11 matches, as a pure goal scorer, he's not setting the world alight. I like his attitude, though. Yes, you're quite right there, Mr. Chris.
But
he is
this
right,
is what I was saying as well. You know,
I still quite like it. I mean, he works hard and he holds the ball well.
But, you know, you can have a goal scorer who's scoring 20 goals a season, but 15 of those are when you're winning 2-3-0. You know, God, if we had that luxury. But if you've got one who scores 10 goals and every one of those goals is the goal that wins a one-goal margin, then that's
I just think Chopper does more throughout the pitch when he's on form.
Yeah.
And I like Campbell, but I wouldn't be... If they're talking a fee for a 32-year-old in January, I'd be letting him go
and
back.
And there's always that inclination to think, well, we sign him permanently and then the form dips.
Yeah, okay. I don't think that would happen.
Got less than a minute now. Prediction for, again, an unbeaten side, aren't they? Millwall, they've not lost.
13, they're unbeaten. So,
and Liam Trotter as well. Right, what do you reckon, Joe?
1-1.
I'm going to say a 1-1 as well.
I'm going to go for a win. Never do that. That could put the mockers on it.
That's the idea.
That's the one. Yeah. No, we should say defeats. All right, thanks. We'll soon see what happens. Thanks to Joe, of course. Thanks to DJ. Till next week, have a good one, and thanks for listening, everyone. Bye-bye.